We do the research, filter out the crap, add some opinion, and fire it up for you on the drive home. Headlines start now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 Headlines brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Audi Performance event is on now. Get lease and finance rates starting at 0.9% and performance credit of up to $4,000. Visit GlenmoreAudi.com.
And we have got a busy day in the world of sports as we welcome you back as the big show continues on this Wednesday afternoon. Matty Rose has got our headlines on this Wednesday afternoon. Matty, what do we got today?
Oh, there is plenty. All of the Sportsnet will have it all covered for you as well. Starting the NHL, as we could see our first team advance to the Stanley Cup Finals tonight. It's game six of the Western Conference Final between the Blues and the Sharks. For the Sharks, no lineup changes expected, but the Blues will go back to Brian Elliott in net. Jake Allen got the start in game five. Here's Blues head coach Ken Hitchcock on his decision.
We needed Joel to get back in the series. We got it. We could have really got out of it yesterday. And I just feel for me like, Brian was the guy. We needed the jolt from Jake. We got it to get back into the series. Unfortunately, we didn't get the win yesterday, but this has been Brian's playoffs, and we'd like him to finish the job.
So Hitchcock looking for that pop, that spark, that jolt as they face elimination. For the Sharks, the big guns have been firing. Joe Pavelski leading the NHL in postseason goals. They've also had production from Joe Thornton, Logan Couture, Patrick Marleau up front, just to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
Blues need their superstar to step up. 40-goal scorer Vladimir Tarasenko. In his last three games, he's minus four, only has four shots on net. Like, I know he has the new baby, plenty of things going on in his life, but if he doesn't start producing, somebody else has to, or else the summer's going to start real soon for the St. Louis Blues.
Look, and I know that there's a lot of stuff going on in Tarasenko's life and all that, but the Blues need him to score. Whether he's got valid reasons or not, the Blues aren't going to have anywhere near as much success if he's not producing offensively. So that's number one. They need more from Tarasenko. There's no doubt about it. But it's not like Tarasenko's been the only guy who has gone cold offensively. Like we've seen a lot of kind of big, I mean, David Backes hasn't been anywhere near as big of a contributor as he was in the first two rounds. And there have been other players who have kind of fallen off the map a little bit more offensively. So it's funny because the Blues not scoring and the Blues having their issues offensively, a much bigger reason as to why they're down 3-2 as opposed to Brian Elliott and the goaltenders. And yet here's Brian Elliott getting the opportunity in game six tonight with St. Louis's season on the line after Jake Allen got the start in the last two games. And I would have stuck with Elliott. I wouldn't have even gone down the road to give Jake Allen his shot, but that road's already gone down. Now it's an opportunity for Elliott to, you hope that he can use it as motivation. You hope that maybe it gives him a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder and he has himself a really, really solid game tonight.
I have to agree with you, Pat. I don't think that the flip-flopping might just add that extra thing to the back of the head of some of the Blues players. Tonight, puck drop is at 7 o'clock. You can watch that one on CBC. We'll have it for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan as well. The Eastern Conference Finals continued yesterday. The Pittsburgh Penguins delivered on Evgeny Malkin's promise of a Game 7, beating the Lightning 5-2. Game with all Penguins in the first two periods. They owned a 3-0 lead after 40 minutes of play. Lightning, they came out strong in the third, though. Dan Boyle scored a couple of goals. Some puck luck may be involved, but it was not enough. Lightning head coach John Cooper laid it out pretty simply for the media post-game.
All their players pretty much played better than all our players for 40 minutes. All our players played probably better than them for 20 minutes. That's it.
Do you think he just ended the press conference after that?
Dropped the mic and left?
That's it. See ya. Unfortunately for the Lightning, hockey played in 60-minute games. 20 minutes usually isn't going to do it. If they want to move on to the finals, they'll need to win one more game on the road. One more note from that one yesterday. Sidney Crosby with his third game winner of the series.
Look, Crosby's been very good for them. Kessel scored again. And the most important thing for Pittsburgh last night was, if you're a fan, you wanted to see them play urgent hockey and you wanted to see them have their best players rise to the occasion. And both happened last night. Couple points for Crosby and the game-winning goal. Letang scored. Kessel opened the scoring 5-on-3. Matt Murray came to play between the pipes. And that looked like an urgent team that knew their season was on the line. So I thought mission accomplished for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've got this back for a Game 7 and they're building now. I got to be honest with you. I don't really have a feel as to what way Game 7 goes. This series has been so close to this point that it really could go either way. I don't see a large advantage one way or the other. But Pittsburgh got the first mission accomplished, and that was get it back to Game 7 on home ice.
Without a doubt, tomorrow that Game 7 will go at 6 o'clock. We'll have it for you on The Fan, and it will be on CBC. Shifting over to basketball now. The Eastern Conference Final continues this evening when the Raptors take on the Cavaliers down in Cleveland. Raptors outscored by a combined 50 points in Game 1 and 2, but they stole a couple wins at home to tie up this series. It's been heavily discussed that the Raptors are a definite underdog, but the Raptors, including DeMar DeRozan, know that anything's possible.
Basketball, at the end of the day, you know, nobody exempt from losing or winning. You know, it's basketball. Anybody could be beat. It's just a matter of who wants it more.
DeRozan had 32 points in Monday's win. Fellow All-Star Kyle Lowry had 35 as well. Yeah. But the big three is being completed by Bismack Biyombo. He's been great for the Raptors in the last two games. In the first two, he had 9 rebounds total. In the last two, he's averaged 20. He's come in for Jonas Valanciunas after he injured his ankle earlier in the postseason and has been a stud on the glass ever since. Valanciunas was available in Game 4, didn't play. Thoughts are we could see him tonight, but it will still be Biyombo starting on the floor.
Well, yeah, and I'm curious as to how they utilize and how they kind of work Valanciunas in and maybe make him a little bit more a bigger part of the game plan in Game 5 tonight. But in a lot of ways, if you're Dwayne Casey, the head coach, why go away from what has worked at this point? I mean, Biyombo's been dominant on the glass and on both sides of the floor. Like, we're talking about possessions continued because some huge offensive boards that he's able to bring down. And obviously what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball has been huge as well. So why go away from what works at this point? And yet you've got a pretty effective player in Valanciunas that, you know, you do want to kind of work his way back into the mix as well. So I'll be very curious as the balance that Dwayne Casey strikes and, you know, maybe fouls play into it. I don't know, but I'm very curious as to how that goes. And look, we knew it going into this series. We said it after game one. We said it before game one. We said it before game two. We said it after game two. If Kyle Lowry specifically, DeRozan, yes, but more so Lowry, if he goes cold and if he has those wild swings of inconsistency, then the Raptors are probably going to follow the way that he's going that particular night. And in game one and game two, not only was Lowry struggling, he was dreadful offensively. Yeah, I mean, he was maybe effective in some other areas of the floor, but dreadful offensively, could not make a shot. And then you go to game three and game four, and he was dynamite. And there's no coincidence, and this is not rocket science, but there's no coincidence that the results have kind of followed in step with the way that Lowry, and to a lesser extent, DeRozan's played to this point. So hasn't happened on the road. They haven't won on the road. If they want to win this series, they've got to win on the road in Cleveland. And that has been, to this point, something that hasn't happened in the 2016 postseason. So just imagine for a second, though, Matty, Toronto goes into Cleveland tonight, wins game five, and comes home for game six with an opportunity to advance to the NBA finals on home floor. Just imagine for a second the pandemonium that we might see at the ACC. The problem is Raptors have got to get past Cleveland in their barn first.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a tale of two teams in this series so far. We'll have to see who shows up tonight. Hopefully with the Raptors maybe thinking that same thing, game six at home, they can get the win. Tip off at 6:30. That one's on Sportsnet West. In the Western Conference Final, surprising series right now. The Oklahoma City Thunder defeat the Golden State Warriors yesterday, 118-94. The Thunder now lead this series 3-1. They've been led by their two superstars, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, and I mean, it's incredible. You use the word surprising. I'll go you one better. Like, I am stunned that we're talking about this being the case right now in a league that never sees upsets. Like, the NBA, more than any other professional sports league, when you're talking about a best of seven playoff series, so much more often than not, you see the top seed beating the bottom seed. And that goes in the first round, second round, third round, and it just happens that way. So to see... And very rarely do you see playoff upsets in the NBA. And then you have maybe the most, not the most improbable upset, because it's still the Western Conference Final, and Oklahoma City deserves to be where they are. But the 73-9 record-setting Golden State Warriors are the team that are all of a sudden going to be one of the first upsets in this year's postseason? Like, to me, that is stunning when you think about it. Again, OKC beat a very good San Antonio team to get here, and they have played very well and are deserving to be where they are, up 3-1 on Golden State, but it's just... It is such a shocker to see this being the case right now, because this is the one I thought Toronto had a better chance of being close to Cleveland than I thought OKC had a better chance of being close to Golden State. And the Thunder aren't even close. They're now a game away from advancing and have got three shots to do it against Golden State. That is incredible to me.
Yes, it has been quite the series between the Warriors and the Thunder. We'll have to wait till Thursday to see what Game 5 holds for that series. Shifting to some baseball now, the Toronto Blue Jays take on the New York Yankees tonight in the second game of their current three-game set. Last night, they fell 6-0, and they struggled at the plate. They recorded two hits in the effort, and on top of that, shortstop Troy Tulowitzki experienced tightness in his quads, wasn't able to finish the contest. He was replaced by Russell Martin at shortstop, which was pretty cool to see. Martin will catch today, Goins will play shortstop, and Devin Travis will make his season debut at second base. We had Dan Shulman from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball and Sportsnet on the show earlier today. He gave some insight on what the Jays plan to do with Travis.
So I think they have to wait and see what he looks like against Major League pitching. He's batting eighth tonight. I think with Travis, they want to wait and see how he does for a couple of days. It looks like with Tulowitzki out, Travis will get a chance to play consecutive days, 2-3 days in a row, whether it's righties or lefties doesn't seem to matter. And if he's swinging the bat well, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that he'll be leading off pretty soon.
Marco Estrada gets the start for the Jays, Ivan Nova for the Yankees. Mm-hmm. We'll get to watch the debut of Devin Travis. Right now, Jose Bautista's in that leadoff spot. He has his hearing for his appeal of his one-game suspension tomorrow.
It's a one-game suspension. If they uphold it, it's one game. If they overturn it, great. It's still one game.
Yeah.
The Travis thing is interesting, and he's batting eighth tonight, so we're not talking about him being put in a real crucial spot in the lineup to get back in, but the way that this team has been struggling offensively, the way that this team has been anemic at the plate, a two-hit effort against the Yankees, and I get that the Yankees have won 7 in a row, and I get they're playing a whole lot better, but still, you should be able to manage more than two hits. They get just two last night. They lose again. They're blank 6-0. Like, you need some kind of spark. And we've been looking for that spark, hoping for that spark. You know, you're hoping that, you know, a good game from Russell Martin, all of a sudden he helps him walk off with a win a couple weeks ago. Maybe that'll be the spark. Well, not really. And Troy Tulowitzki, who's now going to be out for a little bit. It's now going on 2 months of the guy not being able to hit. And Ryan Goins hasn't been able to hit. And Donaldson and Bautista. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of real impressive outings at the plate. And so Devin Travis has shown that he can step in and make an impact in a fairly immediate fashion. And the Blue Jays need a spark in somewhat immediate fashion. And that's a lot of pressure to put on a guy who hasn't played in a year. And I don't want to put that type of pressure on him. But I'm not going to lie. As a Jays fan, my fingers are crossed that maybe he can make some sort of impact early on, maybe give them some type of offensive spark, because Lord knows they need it right now.
Exactly. It's not the time of season anymore where we're talking, oh, they're just early struggles. These are real struggles.
Almost 2 months in now.
Exactly. This season is fully underway, and if you don't get it together soon, you're going to find yourself way back in a place that you just don't want to be. You won't be able to move back and try and take that division, repeat the division title. That's looking like quite the stretch right now. First pitch, just under an hour away. As I mentioned, Marco Estrada on the mound for the Jays, Ivan Nova for the Yankees, and you can watch that game on Sportsnet 1. At the MasterCard Memorial Cup, the final game of the round robin is tonight. It's the host Red Deer Rebels against the WHL champion Branded Wheat Kings. Lots of implications involved with this game. So the London Knights, the OHL champions, have already punched their ticket to the final.
Yep.
They beat the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies last night. If the Rebels win tonight, they'll go on to the semifinal against the Huskies on Friday and eliminate the Wheat Kings. A Wheat Kings win would force a tiebreaker tomorrow. So there is plenty of possibilities involved in this game tonight.
Oh, for sure. Like, you've got the, and we don't even know what the do we know what the tie break would be? Because it all comes down to goals for, goals against.
It comes down to goals for, goals against. So
yeah, we don't even know what the tiebreaker would be until after the tonight's game is played. Because if Brandon wins, then all of a sudden it goes down to goals for, goals against. So you could see any type of permutation in the tiebreaker game, and then that tiebreak game will determine who ends up going to the semifinals. So I'm kind of hoping Brandon wins tonight. Not because I have any rooting interest, just because from a overall tournament standpoint, to have the tiebreak game and then the semifinal and to have it all up in the air is crazy. So I'm kind of hoping Brandon comes away with the win tonight.
Yeah, well, the true fact is, if there is a tiebreaker, that's a lot of hockey for whoever ends up in the final compared to the OHL London Knights, who are currently have a day off. They'll start practicing again tomorrow.
Yeah, they've only scored 20 goals in three games.
Yeah, you know, they got a couple good players on that team.
20-5. They've got Clayton Kershaw numbers right now.
Yeah, exactly, right? That game tonight is at 6 o'clock. If you're itching to watch some junior hockey, tune into Sportsnet 360, and they will have that one for you. I just wanted to mention this as well. At the French Open tennis tournament, Canadian Milos Raonic has advanced to the third round. A three-set win over Adrian Mannarino. He'll now face Andre Martin of Slovakia in the third round. Elsewhere, no surprises on the men's side. Second seed Andy Murray and defending champ Stan Wawrinka moved on as well.
Yeah, and on the men's side, obviously Vasek Pospisil went out early at the French Open, but and it's still early times, early days yet in the French Open, but to have Milos Raonic kind of cruise his way through was good to see, and so far I think you got to be pretty happy with the way he's played to this point. So good news on that side of the fence for Canada and tennis, and hey, I mean, we're seeing it more and more often, specifically with Milos and maybe Jeannie Bouchard can have a little bit of a bounce back season this year. But at majors, we've seen Milos go deeper and deeper and deeper, and we've seen him have some real good deep runs. So he looked good today and certainly cruised through. So right now looks on track to, at the very least, be in the mix for maybe playing for a quarterfinal. That'll be good to see if we can see that from Milos Raonic at the 2016 French Open.
So that's where we end our headlines, with a trip to Roland Garros.
And we'll be back with headlines again tomorrow. Tomorrow's program will be emanating live from Heritage Point, where we'll be live on location for the Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. Always good to be on location there. We're there on a regular basis. Every year we head out for the Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. This year at Heritage Point. It's been at Heritage Point for the last number of years. Now, I know that the weather forecast isn't great. I know that it doesn't sound outstanding, but since 1994, the Flames Alumni Masters Tournament has raised over $2.3 million for charity. This year, proceeds go to support cerebral palsy kids and families in Calgary. So fingers crossed that everything is good on the weather side for tomorrow, so they can get out and golf and continue doing the great work they do in the community. Once again, it's the Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament from Heritage Point. We're live on location from noon till 6 tomorrow. Who's going to win the Calder Trophy this year, or more accurately, who should win the Calder Trophy this season? That's around the corner on the Big Show. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 headlines brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Audi performance event is on now. Get lease and finance rates starting at 0.9% and performance credit of up to $4,000. Visit glenmoreaudi.com.
Calgary's home for great sports talk and Flames play-by-play. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. When it's hockey, it's on the Big Show. Steinberg, Kerr, Sportsnet 960 Calgary.
So who should win the Calder Trophy this year? Great year for Artemi Panarin. He ran away with the rookie scoring lead, and yet there's that number 97 in Edmonton, Connor McDavid, who a lot of people say, even though he missed such a significant time of the season, should get some real love for the Calder Trophy as well. That and a whole lot more now as we welcome in Rob Volman, as he joins us every Wednesday at this time from Hockey Abstract. Hello, Rob. How are you, sir?
Great. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. Your piece on ESPN.com this week is on just that, the Calder Trophy race between Connor McDavid and Artemi Panarin. So I guess just give us a little bit of a rundown. What's the piece about, and how are you feeling on this particular topic?
Well, first of all, I really do see the race, like most people, as being between Panarin and McDavid. There are, of course, other great rookies out there, but that's really, the article is just on those two.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is a very different argument that people are making between them. Like, in one case, You got McDavid having only played 45 games. So is that really enough to judge him as the most proficient rookie in the year? And the keyword there is proficient. That's the language of the award. And on the flip side, you've got Panarin. And a lot of people, what they're arguing about for Panarin is that he's already played close to 300 games as a professional hockey player prior to coming to the NHL. Is it really appropriate to vote for him instead of a legitimate teenager like McDavid? So first of all, how do you see it?
Well, for me, and I understand the kind of hesitation on Panarin, but for me, Panarin played an entire year. He ran away with the rookie scoring lead. He was almost a point per game in his first year in the NHL, and I know that he had plenty of time in the KHL prior to coming over, but for me, the Calder Trophy is the best season by a rookie. Not necessarily who was the most impactful rookie, but who had the best season as a rookie, and because Panarin played the entire season, if I had a vote, he'd get my first place nod, and McDavid would be number two. That's where I am on it, but what about you?
Well, I think there's a strong argument both ways. First, let me say I have no problem with the fact that Panarin played all those games in the KHL prior to the NHL because, first of all, again, the wording of the award is the word rookie doesn't appear. It says first year in the NHL. And really, the only player that was ever really disqualified was Wayne Gretzky from the old World Hockey Association.
Mm-hmm.
There have been plenty of players that came from the old Soviet League, from the Russian Super League, from the KHL, from the top Swedish League, from the top Finnish League, from the AHL, from all over, and they still won the Calder. So I've got no problem with that. The reason I lean a little bit more towards McDavid is the award doesn't go to whoever contributed the most or whoever was the most valuable. It's the most proficient. And so to me, the question is, did McDavid prove in 45 games, was that enough evidence, whether you use the eyeballs or whether you use stats, was that enough evidence that he is a more proficient player than Panarin? And I ran a few numbers, and quite frankly, with 48 points in 45 games, that means over a complete season, McDavid would have finished from anywhere between 79 and 96 points over a full season.
Mm-hmm.
And that entire range is higher than Panarin actually performed, which is 77. Any other year, Panarin surely is the rookie of the year, but this is just one of those rare seasons where he's up against a generational talent, and I give the edge to McDavid.
So how important is it in your eyes for McDavid to have played a full 82 game or closer to a full 82 game season as opposed to the full season that Panarin ended up playing?
You see, I think McDavid just barely proved it. If he had played slightly fewer games, it just wouldn't have been enough evidence. If he had played more, it would have been crystal clear. But as it is, here's an interesting stat. He finished second in the NHL in even strength scoring rate. Not among rookies. I mean among everybody. 2.69 points per 60 minutes. Jagr just barely beat him out for the league lead. With a man advantage, I believe he was fourth or fifth. And by the way, this is playing for the Edmonton Oilers, one of only six teams to fail to score 200 goals. Hmm. Whereas all the other guys on that leaderboard, they all played for Chicago or Washington or Pittsburgh or a powerhouse team. So I really think that you've got to recognize the fact that McDavid had those amazing numbers. And furthermore, if you look at how Eberle and Pouliot scored without McDavid and then their scoring rates with McDavid, you can just see the tremendous impact that McDavid has. And I think that's enough to satisfy me, and I think a lot of the voters, that McDavid is more proficient than Panarin.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you're going to get no argument for me that McDavid wasn't the best rookie to play in the NHL this year, because he was. I think McDavid is a generational talent and had himself an incredible rookie year. It comes down to, is it more about the entire body of work? And then it also comes down to, and this is one that I'll bounce off you right now, Rob, how important is it, and when talking about the word proficient, how important is it to be able to play a full season, to have that type of durability? Because I think I think that kind of plays into the conversation as well. Not to say it's a skill necessarily, but I do think that you have to put some sort of weight on being able to go through an entire NHL season, which McDavid was not able to do.
Yeah, well, that's not through any fault of his own. I mean, injuries happen. To me, was there enough evidence? I mean, if he'd only played 30 games and he tore it up, I'm like, yeah, he tore it up for 30 games, but you just don't know for a fact you would have done that over a full 82. But looking at how he did over 45, statistically, we can calculate confidence intervals. And there's enough data now, whether you use eyeballs or whether you use spreadsheets, there's enough data now to show that, yes, he is, and he did have, a more impactful season than Panarin. Not in terms of overall contributions, because Panarin played more games, but that's not what the award says. In a perfect world, the award would actually say, you know, whoever contributed the most, and it would also have a cutoff. You can't be 20-something years old. It's just for teenagers or 20 at the most. But the wording of the award is what it is, and I think neither player can be disqualified. And I think McDavid has the edge. Although, as you can read from the article, there's a strong argument both ways.
So if you had a vote right now, and obviously these two guys would be first or second, who would get your first place vote? McDavid?
Yeah, I'm going to go McDavid. But I'm not going to argue with someone who went Panarin. I think there's a strong case both ways.
And that's kind of where I am, too. I would go Panarin, but I mean, if McDavid wins, if I can't sit here and say that's ridiculous because the guy's incredible. It's just, it's really, because there is, you talk about the wording of the award, there is still some gray area in the wording, and it leaves it open to interpretation. And that's why this conversation to me is so fascinating. Really good article on ESPN.com from Rob Volman, who joins us on Hockey Abstract right now. It's going to be one of Panarin or McDavid. Who should it be winning Rookie of the Year? I very much encourage you to go give it a read. Mr. Volman, we have that conversation, which is one of my favorite conversations in a long time. And then we've got the conversation of what's going on the ice right now. The San Jose Sharks get set to play Game 6 of the Western Conference Final tonight, and they're one win away from a Stanley Cup Final for the first time in their history. Now, during the regular season, this is a Sharks team that, especially from about December on, was one of the better analytic teams in the National Hockey League. So, them being a win away from the Stanley Cup, or from playing for a Stanley Cup, is this where they should be? Is this where they're supposed to be, knowing what they're capable of?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I was at a hockey analytics conference with a lot of the top statisticians just before the playoffs, and they all ran their numbers, and I was surprised how universally people were predicting San Jose. And I think the difference is when you just run the numbers, you're not affected by things like, oh, the reputation that the Sharks are chokers, or that they don't show up in the playoffs, or that there's something that happens to Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau or something in the playoffs. You're just looking at the facts. You're just looking at the objective details that can be measured and counted. And from that, when you just look at it that way, the Sharks were absolutely one of the top contenders for the Stanley Cup this year. So I don't think it should be a surprise that right now they're in a position to do it.
So what has allowed them to do it this year? Because by and large, this core group hasn't changed a whole lot. And I know that there have been a lot of changes in some of the peripheral pieces, but even going back to last year's non-playoff team and this year's team that's in Game 6 of a Western Conference Final, not a ton of difference in terms of the roster. So what's been the biggest difference, or the biggest differences as to why they are where they are?
Well, they've always been a strong team for years. And, you know, there's always... So maybe they run into some bad luck, or they go through a really cold streak and that hurts them in the regular season. But they did make some important changes. I mean, obviously the goaltending, you've got to be impressed, you know, at their new goaltending combination. Well, especially with Jones. I think picking up Paul Martin on the blue line was a great move. They already had Vlasic. Picking up Paul Martin, and that really freed up Brent Burns, so I think really unleashed his full potential. And, of course, you got to hand it to the veterans up front, all of them, whether it's Pavelski and Thornton, who were in the regular season possibly one of the league's best lines, and that continued into the playoffs. And, of course, Logan Couture, I mean, just also being fully unleashed by the fact that you have other players like Pavelski and Thornton carrying some of the heavier minutes. So, really, it's a team effort, and some of those roster changes they made had sort of compound effects further down the lineup, and I think that's been the secret.
He is Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract, joins us every Wednesday at this time here on the big show on Sportsnet 96 of the Fan. Rob, both the Penguins and the Blues have made goaltending changes in this series. With the Penguins, it went Murray to Fleury, back to Murray, and in St. Louis, it went Elliott, and then Allen for two, and then back to Brian Elliott for Game 6 tonight. How have you kind of viewed, or have you agreed with the way these two teams have handled their goaltending situations?
Well, you know, with Pittsburgh, it's one situation because Fleury, of course, was dealing with injuries. So you go with the healthy hand. Matt Murray always had the pedigree. He always had the stats that one day he was going to be a strong NHL goalie. The surprise is just that he was able to do that right away as a rookie with no NHL experience. And obviously, you keep when he's playing that well, you stay with him. The St. Louis situation is different just because Brian Elliott led the league in save percentage for the second time in five seasons. He's really one of the unheralded goalies of the NHL. And I think you stick with him no matter what. There really was no reason, to switch to Jake Allen. I think you just keep going with Brian Elliott. But, you know, it's not like there's a big difference. I mean, both teams have a couple of strong goalies. And for that matter, look what's happening in Tampa Bay. You think losing Ben Bishop would derail them. Well, you know, their backup, Vasilevsky's actually been doing very well, too. So I think that just goes to show you the importance of having a good backup.
So then let me take it a little bit further, because I find I really like the way that you have framed kind of a good way to go about targeting a goaltender in the offseason, a good way that, you know, a team like the Calgary Flames, for instance, needs a upgrade in their goaltending situation. And I've always kind of enjoyed the way that you kind of look at it analytically. So we know that Matt Murray is having an outstanding postseason. We know that, you know, the most important game of their year is tomorrow, Game 7, and Matt Murray's going to get the start. So what about Marc-Andre Fleury this summer? Is he a guy that you would target if you needed a number one goaltender or if you needed an upgrade between the pipes?
No, absolutely not. First of all, my position has always been that there's always a wealth of great goalies, effective goalies, on the free agent market for $1 or $2 million. And I'm not saying that after the fact. On the show in the past, I said, hey, Devan Dubnyk is a great value, right? And that was back when he had that bad season. Came back, was a Vezina finalist for $800,000. Last summer, I was talking about Thomas Greiss. I talked about Neuwirth. I talked about a bunch of goalies that were available for $1 or $2 million. They were all effective. I think you got to wait and look for one of those $1 or $2 million goalies. There's no reason to spend $3, $4, $5, or $6 million on a player like Marc-Andre Fleury, who's not that much better than the rest of them, and possibly worse. The only real value to Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, is he is highly effective in the shootout. So that gets you a few extra points in the regular season, but that's not worth several more million. So under really no circumstances would I pursue Marc-Andre Fleury.
So final question for you. Some other names that could, we don't know, but could be available if we were to get that far in the offseason in between the pipes. Brian Elliott's name has been thrown out there. Jake Allen's name has been thrown out there. You mentioned the name Andre Vasilevsky. Of those guys, who kind of jumps off the page to you would be a really good target to go after?
You know, there's a lot of really good stats to measure goalies. It's not just save percentage. We've got all sorts of great stats, like quality starts and how goalies do in that home plate area. In fact, it's that last stat that helped us find guys like Greiss and Dubnyk, how goalies do in the home plate area. However, among the names that you listed, I think if you can actually get Brian Elliott for a similar contract to what he currently has, I mean, that's amazing. For 5 years in St. Louis, he's been a steady goalie for barely over $2 million. Twice he's led the league in save percentage. So I think if you can get a goalie like that for a price like that, that's great. If you can't get him for that price, then you're better off finding someone just as good or maybe a touch worse. Save the money and invest that in on your blue line.
Good stuff, Rob. You can find Rob Volman on Twitter, at Rob Volman NHL. You can find him on HockeyAbstract.com, ESPN.com, and a whole lot of other spots as well. Good conversation today, as always, my friend. Thanks for doing it. We'll do it again next Wednesday, hey?
Yeah, you bet. Enjoy the game tonight. Going to be a good one.
You too, Rob. Thank you, man. Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract joining us here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. A lot of live on location shows. So tomorrow from Heritage Point for the Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. Friday from Big Four Motors. And then we're coming to you on Saturday for a special show from Stampede Toyota. Right after Blue Jays baseball on Saturday, we'll kick in Robbie and I from Stampede Toyota, Barlow Trail, two blocks north of 16th Avenue in the Northeast, talking all kinds of sports. And Stampede Toyota is clearing out all used vehicles at up to 50% off. Choose from over 400 new and used vehicles, over $10 million worth of inventory. Stampede Toyota is where we'll be coming up on Saturday from 1 until 6 p.m. That is Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract. Lots of Western Conference, Eastern Conference final talk right there. What about the Blues flip-flopping their goaltenders heading into Game 6 of the Western Conference final tonight? We'll bounce that off of our East-West hot stove around the corner. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
When it's hockey, it's on The Big Show. Steinberg, Kerr, Sportsnet 960, Calgary.
East West Hot Stove, brought to you by Shaganappy Insurance. Is your small business insurance covering everything it should? Contact the knowledgeable staff at Shaganappy Insurance and find out. Like Shaganappy Insurance on Facebook.
My name is Pat Steinberg, and it is time for the East West Hot Stove with Eric DeHatchick from the Globe and Mail and Al Morganti, the lead hockey analyst at Comcast Sports Philadelphia. Gentlemen, as always, appreciate this, and hopefully your days are going well. Lots to talk about as we get set for Game 6 of the Western Conference Final tonight and Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final tomorrow. But let's start with tonight, first of all. The Blues going back to Brian Elliott in net with their season on the line. St. Louis has flip-flopped. They went with Elliott for the entire postseason, then Jake Allen for two games, and now back to Brian Elliott tonight. Eric, do you like the way the Blues have handled their goaltenders?
Yes. I mean, I think that you have to go with Brian Elliott tonight, just because he's the goalie that basically got you into this position. I mean, you know, the putting Jake Allen in that position is the same as the position that Marc-Andre Fleury was in, the other night in Pittsburgh. I mean, one is a goalie that's been around a long time. One is a goalie that's just establishing himself as an NHL regular. But the common ground is it's really hard to play at this time of year when the level is so high, when there's so much at stake. It's a mental game, it's a physical game, and both those guys had so much time on the sidelines that they're just not sharp. So you go with the guy that brought you there, and Brian Elliott has shown in these playoffs and at different times in his career that he is capable of throwing a shutout at the San Jose Sharks. So he would be my choice if I was making the call, and you know, it may not make a difference. I mean, San Jose looks great right now, but I keep coming back to something we've talked about before, Pat. If they don't score enough goals on Martin Jones tonight, it's not going to matter who's in goal.
I liked it a whole lot more. I don't like what Pittsburgh did with their goaltenders. I like the fact that Hitchcock's gone with the guy that got you there. He's the guy you want everything on. I believe you want it on your shoulders. I think he played so many games. It made sense to me to make the switch. That was a team that sort of needed a jolt. I didn't think Pittsburgh did the way St. Louis did. But I think Hitchcock read it right to what he did to his team, and he called it a sort of a jolt to the team. And I think he got what he needed out of it, and all along thought when it gets down to it, save from, you know, the miraculous performances, we'll go back to the guy that brought us here through these playoffs. So I really have no problem with it. There are times that it looks now like coaches are playing whack-a-mole with their goalies. I mean, there have been so many switches comparatively to previously. But this doesn't smack me of that. This looks more, it looks more composed and not just a reflexive thing. Oh, let's see if this can work. I think this one made more sense. And I agree with Eric. I would have gone back here.
You know what's crazy, Al? I contacted Bob Waterman at the Elias Sports Bureau because I thought exactly the same thing as you. I said to him, I can't remember a year like this where there have been so many goalies to play. I actually went through the stats. There's 28 goalies that have been used in the playoffs. You know what his answer was? This is a guy that has all the stats at his fingertips. He said, it's not that unusual that 2 years ago, teams used 28 goalies in the playoffs, and the record is 32. It was set back when we were starting out in 1990 and in 1995. So, you know, it struck me that we were seeing things one way, and yet, according to the stats, you know, this is not as uncommon as we think. So I don't know what you make of that, but that, according to Bob Waterman, is what's happened this year, that it is not that unusual to have this back and forth. I thought it was, too.
I think it may be the teams this deep to do that. I think unusual, but I don't have the inside numbers, as they say, to what's gone on. But usually a team that goes deeper, there's one guy that's carried you. But it seems to me that's just another case that the goalies are so good they devalued themselves. Even the guys that are backup or deep backup can come in and step in and play a more than credible game.
With Al Morganti and Eric DeHatchick, they join us every Wednesday here on the East West Hot Stove. So that's the goaltending situation from a St. Louis side of things. And yet here's San Jose, one win away from their first ever Stanley Cup final. And I know that I've asked you this question before, Eric, but I thought it'd be a good one for you guys to throw around, because it is fascinating to me that the Sharks have never been this far before. They could be heading off to their first ever Stanley Cup final. So Al, I'll ask you first, and then Eric can bounce off it. But Al, what makes this group different than Sharks teams in the past that have failed to get to the promised land and failed to maybe live up to their potential?
Well, I really like the coach. and I can't, you can't see it, but they don't have, I don't see the cloud following them around the rink like I used to. For whatever reason, there's a lightness to them that I didn't see in the past. I mean, some of it's just on what happened in the happenstance of the playoffs, who they got to avoid and whatnot. But when you've got a Pavelski and a Thornton and a Burns that kind of lighten it, I don't see the heaviness to this, the end of the worldness to this that I'd seen previously, or at least I thought I saw with Sharks. Maybe I just wanted to read into it all the expectations. But even coming into this, I don't think they had that chain to drag around with them coming in.
Now, Al, you're 100% right, because I was there at the start of the playoffs with them, and the one thing that I noticed was that in past years, they were often a very sexy choice to win the Stanley Cup. You know, you'd hear people say, San Jose is my pick, and I think that they felt the weight of those expectations. So this year, they start the playoffs on the road in Los Angeles, and everyone is focusing on the fact that here's Martin Jones, who was the understudy to Jonathan Quick, going up against Jonathan Quick, and how can he possibly, you know, provide the kind of goaltending that you need to beat the LA Kings. The Kings were a rested team. They looked sharp. It just looked like LA was the team that was poised to go deep in the playoffs this year. The odds makers had them rated just behind Washington. So I think that the San Jose Sharks went into these playoffs with almost like a free pass in terms of expectations. It was like, well, if you can knock off LA, good for you. And if not, no one is going to worry too much. And I think that has made a difference. But the other thing that you referenced, which I think is absolutely true, is that some of those years when they haven't met expectations, some of their players were really beat up. You know, sometimes you just have to be healthy. You know, you look at Joe Thornton right now, and he's a guy that's just got lots of energy. And you know, there was a year where he played with a separated shoulder. A lot of years, their key people were playing hurt, and it undermined performance. And this year, it's just been one of those years. You know, Thornton's healthy, Pavelski's healthy. Burns is healthy. Vlasic is healthy. I mean, you know, the guys that make a difference have all managed to get through these playoffs physically unscathed, and that has not happened in past years for San Jose.
And that game coming your way at 7 o'clock tonight, so we're just over 2 hours away from puck drop in San Jose. Sharks and Blues for Game 6 of the Western Conference Final. Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail. Al Morganti is the lead hockey analyst for Comcast Sports Philadelphia, joining us here on the East-West Hot Stove. Final topic to kick around, and that's what happens tomorrow. The Penguins accomplished one mission, and that is to get Game 7 back to their building against Tampa Bay tomorrow. So, pretty simple one. And Al, you've seen this team play a lot this year from where you're situated. Just your overall feel. Who do you like in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final tomorrow?
I like the Penguins. I like Crosby. I mean, it sounds simple to go to the guy who's still, in my opinion, after what he did the second half of this year, still the go-to guy in the league. Had the big one the last game. It's weird, though. This league, Game 7's on the road. It seems like if you're on the road in these playoffs, you're in better. So I actually think St. Louis is better off being on the road, too. But I like Pittsburgh. I like Crosby to carry him through this thing. And I said earlier, I didn't like the goaltending change that they made. I thought that was an irrational change, that kid had played so well. I didn't think there's any need for it. And I like the fact that he's gone in and they'll play, a more controlled game. Letang's got lost a few times in this thing. He's an emotional player. He's lost that. But I think everything's in order for this Game 7.
Yeah, I've got a coin, and I've been flipping it back and forth since you sent this topic out, Pat. But it came up 6 times Pittsburgh and 4 times Tampa. I'm going to go with that because I can't think of a rational explanation for what's been going on in this series, in this playoff. So I figure you may as well take the irrational thing. And if the odds say Pittsburgh is slightly better, I mean, they do have a better team. They had the better regular season record. They have the superstars, and especially in Crosby's case, you know, playing extremely well. But you know, what have this year's playoffs taught us? That, you know, one game, winner take all, showdown, anyone can win. And the road team has just as often over, you know, gone in there again with low expectations and won the game. So I don't say that with any conviction. And I think that one of but that's one of the beauties of this year's playoffs is that, you know, like, especially up here, Al, you know, there's been a lot said about no Canadian teams in it. The only people that are watching are the people that like to watch hockey. They just like to watch hockey. And so, you know, if you don't have a cheering interest and you just like to watch hockey, the completely unpredictable nature of these playoffs has provided a lot of entertainment. And so that's what I see happening in Game 7. And to me, you know, if you tell me Tampa's going to win, you know, I will not bat an eyelash.
Yep. It's been a very, very fun series, and I'm kind of with you. I don't know which way to think about Game 7 tomorrow, and that's kind of the best part about it. Just go in, watch the game, and see what happens. Gentlemen, as always, great stuff. Eric Tuhatchik of the Globe and Mail, Al Morganti, the lead hockey analyst at Comcast Sports Philadelphia. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Bye.
There you go, the East-West Hot Stove, every day, every Wednesday, here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's true. I don't know which way to go. I don't know which way to lean when it comes to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final, and I think that's awesome. Every once in a while, you know what, not having an opinion and just sitting back and chilling out and having no preconceived notions, it's a pretty fun way to watch sports. Game 7 is tomorrow, but first, we've got Game 6 of the Western Conference Final tonight. Who is, first, we don't even know. We're a little early for who. Before we ask who, let's ask if we're going to see a Game 7. San Jose's got a 3-2 series lead. This is the closest they've ever been to a Stanley Cup Final before. Can the Blues force a Game 7, or will San Jose make it to their first ever Cup Final? We'll find out in about 2 hours' time. We've got that game for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Okay, the Toronto Blue Jays have been absolutely awful at the plate this season. But should we be worried about it right now? Is it concerning right now? Or is there still a little time to go before we get to that stage? Dan Shulman is our Major League Baseball insider. He'll answer that question around the corner as we continue on The Big Show this afternoon here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
East West Hot Stove brought to you by Shaganappy Insurance. Is your small business insurance covering everything it should? Contact the knowledgeable staff at Shaganappy Insurance and find out. Like Shaganappy Insurance on Facebook.